The Irish Cancer Society are currently experiencing a shortage of night nurses for its end-of-life palliative care services in County Kildare. I'm joined now by practicing night nurse who is serving families in the Kildare area. That is Breed McCarthy. How are you today, Breed?
I am good, Ciara. Thank you very much for having me on your show.
I appreciate you taking the time. So the first thing I want to ask you before we get into the service's difficulties at the moment in terms of finding night nurses, what exactly does a night nurse do?
Well, as night nurses, we work in tandem with the community palliative care teams at the various centres throughout Ireland. And our service is requested by these clinical nurse specialists when they see that patients, I suppose, who are approaching their end of life need, I suppose, extra intervention, you know, in the sense of more expertise is needed at night time. And families also are usually very tired at that stage and they need a rest. The responsibility that families take on is huge, varying from, you know, communication with various healthcare professionals to the whole emotional aspect of having to look after a loved one and knowing that they, you know, that they will be leaving them soon.
So the Irish Cancer Society, the night nurses, did provide over 200 nights of care to 60 families in County Kildare in 2021. Now, more nurses are needed, Breed. Obviously, you're pointing out just what an essential service it is. There's so many requests at the moment for assistance, and it's impossible at the moment, I guess, to keep all those who would like the assistance satisfied.
Oh, absolutely, yes, and you know it's an extremely difficult job to do when the Irish Cancer Society have to prioritise, and that's the only way of dealing with it. I mean, it is a job. I'm in my fourth year of working as a night nurse. And I just can't say how much I love the job. It gets better and better. We are, you know, we look after one patient in their home. We support families. It's an 8-hour shift. It's extremely family friendly to work as a night nurse. You know, I work an average three nights a week. And I have the flexibility of choosing which nights I work. But yes, it's an extremely difficult job when there is a shortage of night nurses, and especially when, you know, when I leave families in the mornings, it's oftentimes uncertain whether there will be a nurse on the following night and available to them. And on top of the stress that they're experiencing, you know, with looking after their loved one, this is a stress that they should not have to experience.
I just want to touch on a moment the night nurses themselves and how they deal with a situation like this. You've stated that you absolutely love your job and I'm sure you get such fulfilment out of it and helping people at probably the most vulnerable time in their lives. Is it difficult, Breed, to walk away from these families after the loved one has passed away? And how is it for a night nurse to deal with their own struggles in terms of the loss of someone who may become their friend?
Yes, well, I will say, Ciara, we do often develop a bond with families, particularly if you go to the same family again for a subsequent night. And that's another beauty of the job, is we're given that option to, you know, follow through with a case and stay with the family. I won't deny it is difficult. I mean, I've had my own personal experiences, and I suppose this is one of the reasons why I see the other side of people's, you know, experiences. But yes, it is difficult. We have great support from the organisation. The Irish Cancer Society are absolutely a wonderful organisation to work with. And we have each other as colleagues and we have support meetings. I won't deny it is difficult. But I do see death, and I suppose a lot of fear death, but I do see death as, I suppose, a very natural part of our journeys. And I suppose maybe with experience as well, it gives me that perspective. But yeah, there are supports there, but it is an extremely rewarding job. And we can't deny that people do die. And to allow someone to die at home, surrounded by their families, you know, in an environment that they're familiar with, you know, particularly during the pandemic when it was very difficult for people to visit, you know.
I was just about to ask you about that. Tell me a little more about your experience of night nursing during the pandemic. I know we're still in it. It's still declared, but very different from, you know, 2020 and 2021.
Yes, well, you know, I felt very cared for by the Irish Cancer Society, and during the very difficult initial stages, we did provide a settlement support service, and we did go to families and make sure that the patient was settled for the night, and then we would offer a phone support during the night. But subsequent to that, then it became easier. Obviously, we were wearing our PPE. But yeah, and I suppose given the nature of the pandemic, and because people would have been restricted in visiting families, some people chose to die at home. So I suspect the numbers of deaths, you know, will be seen to have increased during the pandemic.
We know that the Irish Cancer Society has now started a recruitment drive since yesterday, and that is part of the reason why you're here to talk with me this afternoon. So in terms of the role, it may be suitable for people with nursing experience who are able to commit, as you noted, 8 hours. It's 6 to 8 nights of care per month, Breed. And anyone who's interested can get on to the Irish Cancer Society. Where is the best place for them to go?
Well, Ciara, yeah, absolutely. And that's it, you know, it's that minimum of 8 nights per month, which is, and again, as you mentioned, it's an 8-hour shift. You know, we start routinely at 11. Now, that might be slightly, there might be slight variance in that, but at 11 p.m. until 7 a.m. in the morning, you know, if someone has small children, it's an ideal job. Your children are in bed, they're settled, they're asleep, and then you're back in the morning, oftentimes when they wake up, and you know, during school times, then you can drop them to school or whatever, and you have, ideally, you have your time to rest then. But yes, there is a free phone number for the ICS. It's a support line, but they can, anyone who would like to, you know, who has an interest in perhaps trying it, and I would suggest trying it, because you know, just try it and see. It's just a truly amazing job. But the number is 1-800-200-700.
You can also, anybody out there who's interested in applying, can go to recruitment@irishcancer.ie, and more career, I guess, opportunities are available on cancer.ie's website. So it's for people with nursing experience who are able to commit to 6 to 8 nights of care per month, and as Breed pointed out, 8 hours. Thank you so much, Breed. You obviously do such amazing things for so many people, and what an amazing thing to be involved in. Breed McCarthy is a practicing night nurse. She's serving families here in the Kildare area, and the Irish Cancer Society is finding it difficult at the moment to secure night nurses. Again, that free phone support line, 1-800-200-700, or anyone interested can apply to recruitment@irishcancer.ie. Now, you would have heard on our news throughout the day that childcare costs in County Kildare on average now per month are €844. But Elaine Loughlin, the deputy political editor of the Irish Examiner, is writing today saying that parents will see their monthly childcare costs cut by hundreds of euro. This is under the cost of living plans being drawn up for the budget. Joining me now to discuss this situation is the National Secretary of the Association of Early Childcare Providers. That is Joan O'Sullivan. Good afternoon to you, Joan.
Hi, Ciara. How are you?
I am very well, thank you. So the Children's Minister, Roderick O'Gorman, he's finalising these proposals to significantly reduce creche fees and increase pay rates for those working in the sector. First off, I'm going to begin with the average price here in this county, €844 per month. Joan, just absolutely not in a lot of people's price range, financial world. It's not a possibility to them.
No, and I completely understand that, but I think looking at the figures that came out today, people in Kildare are very lucky, because in Dublin, by the looks of things, from the figures that came out today, the average cost is €1,275. So if you look at that, I'm quite shocked by it. That wouldn't have been my own experience. I do believe the figures are accurate, but certainly it's absolutely unaffordable. I completely agree with you.
If you believe the figures are accurate, why such shock and surprise, I guess?
Well, because that wouldn't be my own experience in my own service and most services, childcare services that I know. I'm in the Dublin area, my own creche. And look, we all publish our fees. The fees for myself, for children of that age, are €975 per month, and I would be included, I suppose, in that average. So I'm looking and saying, if the average is 1,275 minus 975, oh my goodness, what on earth is going on in some places and why?
So if you're to expand on that thought, what could the answers you possibly come up with?
I think the figures that came out today show that there was a 20% increase over the last 4 years, since 2018. And I think the problem is there, and really what needs to be done. Well, look, mid-September last year, the government announced a new package called core funding. And I'm sure people have heard the phrase being used. And that's a package of supports that are going to be made available in September of this year. Mm-hmm. I don't know all the details yet.
Do you know what? I'm actually going to go through those, Joan, just while you touch on that.
Course.
So the Minister, Roderick O'Gorman, he said the hikes in fees charged by childcare providers had effectively cancelled out this financial support in previous years. So last year's budget focused on funding for the providers, but the introduction in a freeze in fees, which is due to come in force this autumn, September, as you noted, is the, in quotes, first step in making childcare more affordable for parents. This is a direct quote from the Children's Minister, Roderick O'Gorman. The freeze for this September will mean that when we secure this package in Budget 2023 of a very significant investment in the National Childcare Service, that's the direct subsidy parents receive to reduce the cost of childcare. He says it will mean a reduction as opposed to the past. When the NCS was introduced, childcare fees ended up going up and it eroded away any increase seen in the subsidy. Now that we have the fee freeze, parents will actually feel the benefit of the significantly enhanced NCS payments that we are looking to secure in this year's budget.
Look, Ciara, I just tell you, childcare services were able to benefit from the EWSS system scheme during COVID. And our department, the Department of Children, Minister O'Gorman's department, asked childcare providers not to increase fees. And this is going back to mid-2021, asked us not to increase our fees while you were getting EWSS. And that was a very fair request from them because they were heavily supporting us. And this is why I'm so shocked at that price increase, because in my experience, most providers honoured that. I certainly haven't put up my fees since 2018. So I'm looking and saying, why would anybody put up their fees when they were being heavily subsidised by government? Then you would ask, how were they allowed to put up their fees when they're being heavily subsidised by government? So effectively, in my experience, most childcare providers have honoured that and have frozen their fees. And that would be since the beginning of the pandemic. So it's not that we'll have a price freeze from September this year. We have one. We have one, and we've had one since we were asked not to increase our fees in 2021.
But obviously some people maybe didn't.
Well, okay, there you go.
Play by the rules. I can't, I'm not saying that for factually, because I don't know. But if someone like you in the Dublin area is so surprised, as you say, the average is near €300 or €250 more expensive than what you're offering parents in the Dublin area. What's the highest possibly? Could it be near €2,000 for all we know? We don't have those answers obviously right now. But one other area of the childcare services that I guess doesn't help the situation is that the workforce of almost 30,000, almost all women also, has always been very poorly paid. That is what Roderick O'Gorman did say. A joint Labour committee process is due to set out a wage rate for the entire sector. The entry pay is expected to be set at around €13 an hour. Joan, are you finding that difficult to secure staff and I guess keep them?
Yes, and if I was offering them €13 an hour, I'd probably be finding it difficult to get them as well. I mean, €13 an hour is very fair. I think anybody who's not paying that needs to think about it. Because all childcare staff are qualified, everybody deserves a decent wage. So the core funding that I mentioned earlier, this package that's coming in September, the intention of that is to allow childcare providers to substantially increase staff wages.
But does that mean that possibly that the price of having your child cared for during the day or whatever, however many days a week it may be, will also increase?
You will, if you sign up for this core funding package, you must agree to freeze your fees.
Okay.
That's the deal.
Okay, so a little bit different from the pandemic. People didn't exactly have to
this time
sign
you
off
have
on
to.
This.
Yes,
okay,
yes,
okay,
yes.
That's the main difference. And it seems as if some people did not freeze their fees, I guess, during the pandemic. Like
it
you're saying, a lot of people like yourself,
yes.
It wasn't mandatory, exactly. So if we look at this county, for example, County Kildare, the survey, this is just a new survey, figures are revealing the parents are paying €844 a month for childcare. In 2018, the figure was €850. If you go back to 2013, kind of coming out of the recession, I guess, it was €814. So €30 more expensive today than it was 9 years ago. Is that much of a difference?
Oh my goodness, if that's all it is, that's fair, because I would hope everybody has increased staff wages. So actually I'd look at that and say, how is that sustainable? Because my staff, whether I've increased fees or not, my staff have had pay increases, and most childcare providers, look, most good ones have increased their staff wages. It mightn't be a huge amount. But most providers know that their staff. We know our staff are working hard, and we, most of us, are doing what we can to make sure that our staff are rewarded for that.
Okay, thank you very much for joining me this afternoon. That is Joan O'Sullivan. She's the National Secretary of the Association of Early Childcare Providers. So 2013, the average here in County Kildare per month was 814. Now in 2022, what are we in? June 2022, €844 per month for childcare. So a €30 increase. I am very surprised, a €30 increase over the past 9 years and at the coming towards the kind of, you know, end of the recessionary period as well. We probably had passed the recession by maybe, 2011, 2012, maybe, like, you know, in terms of definition. But a lot of people were still suffering very badly at that time. So I'm surprised by that. So the annual early years sector profile report was published last month, and it found the average weekly fee per child for full day care is €186.84. That means in terms of the 26 county, on average, full-time care for one child is €746. So here in County Kildare, €98 more at €844. But as you may have heard, in parts of County Dublin, over €1,200. Co-founder of the Irish Patients Association says that the country needs someone directly responsible for the management of hospital waiting lists, and that is due to figures being revealed that one in four people in Ireland are waiting for hospital, diagnostic or therapy treatment. Joining me is that co-founder, Stephen McMahon. How are you this afternoon?
Good afternoon. Very well, thank you. After a nice weekend, it's unfortunate to have to look back into the serious issues in our healthcare system, which are dogging us and affecting so many hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people.
Now, the Irish Hospital Consultants Association have said that there's been a 54% increase in people waiting for treatments. That is since the launch of Sláinte Care Plan in 2017. And obviously, 2.5 years after that, there was a pandemic, meaning that this is a recipe for disaster in terms of hospital waiting lists at the moment.
Well, without a doubt, certainly the pandemic and indeed the cyber attack did have an impact on the overall capacity of the healthcare system. But just to put it in context for your listeners of what that one in four is, one in four of the entire population of Ireland are on some hospital or healthcare waiting list or other. And that's not the full list in its own right. But half the population, or 47% of the population, have private health insurance. So that means that one in four becomes almost one in two of all people that don't have private health insurance or on some waiting list or other. And the ones that are insured, are really effectively, they're not on any waiting list. They will see their consultant within a few weeks. They will have their consultant face-to-face appointments. They will have their tests and scheduled for their operations at a particular point in time, and they will go in and it's highly unlikely it would be cancelled, and they recover and get back into the spaciousness of their health. But unfortunately for the public patients, they're waiting years to see the consultant to have that first appointment. And indeed, it's not a consultant appointment, it's a consultant-led appointment. So you would see the registrar maybe working under the direction of the consultant. And then you would be, would have to get tests done and you wait more for that. And then finally they say, well, you do need a hip replacement or you need some other surgery, and you go on to another waiting list there, which could at the moment take up to a year and a half or 2 years to get the job done. That's how serious the system is for public patients.
You're mentioning years there. It's estimated that it's going to take up to 11 years to clear the patient backlogs. Realistically, what does that mean for our public health service?
It means it's crumbling. It means that patients aren't getting timely access to care. And that is the fundamental tenet of a modern healthcare system, that it's there for you as a patient when you need it, at the right time and the right place and so on and so forth. But when you hear figures of taking 11 years to clear waiting list numbers, it really just says, you know, the system is in need of urgent care. For example, you know, last weekend we heard and read about and saw on our televisions the huge queues in Dublin Airport for people waiting to go off on holidays or go about their business. And of that, there were 1,400 travellers missed their flights, And there was a huge outcry amongst the political establishment and community and society and so on as to how bad this was. But David Cullinan got an answer to a parliamentary question, I think it was, in the month of April, as to how many appointments and operations had been cancelled. And the figure was 10 times the number of people that missed their flights last Sunday week. It was 14,000 in the month of March, and then in the month of April, and then in May now we had the strike with the scientists and lab technicians and so on, and that added another 14,000 or 15,000 to those that were cancelled. But it's not like in an aircraft, you know, where they are scheduled in as quickly as possible to get their next flight. They are scheduled back into the healthcare system over time, and I think one of the things that's needed is for the HSE to tell us, confirm to us, that all those patients that were cancelled in the month of April and cancelled in the month of May have actually had their consultation or have had their operation. Not that they're scheduled, but they've actually had it done. And then we're talking business as to monitoring the performances.
Stephen, this morning I was speaking with David Hall of Lifeline Ambulance Services on our Current Affairs show in the morning, that is Kildare Today, and I asked him, we're talking about the wait times and, you know, the number of people who have been waiting and the hours for an ambulance to turn up at the scene and how it is the patients that are suffering. He called it inhumane. Mm. We're on a similar topic here, obviously, but I asked him about, you know, the public and the I guess the view of society on these issues. We have become numb. That's the word I used with David to these figures. And do you feel as if, you're mentioning the airport situation, we're not taking enough action as the general public when it comes to our hospital services? Like, should a little bit of responsibility be also on our shoulders? Because we'll also be touching on the fact that you feel someone needs to be held accountable in terms of, you know, government and organisation when it comes to, you know, healthcare waiting lists. But what about the wider public?
I agree with David Hall's assessment. I think that, you know, the outcry that happened at the airport, you know, we heard politicians talking about our international reputation and so on. But I think our international reputation in the area of people looking at how our health system is performing, and you have public patients, almost one in two of, you know, people who have no health insurance are on some waiting list or other that could wait up to 11 years. I mean, you know, if this was in the private sector, could you imagine going into a consultant secretary and asking, or, you know, your GP has given you a letter to get the consultant to get a second opinion or whatever, and you go in and they offer you an appointment for 2023 or 2024 or even 2025. It just would be unheard of. Yet for some reason in the public mind, it seems to be, oh, well, it's okay. You know, that's the way the health system is. But it requires to have, you know, proper governance and leadership and systems, and indeed the capacity issues that we hear about, you know, having more beds and nurses and doctors where they're appropriately needed. But the thing is that there really isn't anybody accountable for this.
So who should be accountable then, Stephen?
That's why we're calling for, you know, an individual within the HSC and within the hospitals to be the accountable person for the successful implementation.
But who would that possibly be? Where would they be, you know, how would they be put into that position? What would be the process
well,
to
we
get?
Have seen, yeah, okay, I hear you. I mean, we have seen how successful it was when they put someone in charge of the vaccination program and the track and trace during COVID. And that's the level of seniority that you need there that actually can call the shots and break down any barriers. I'm a member of the Emergency Department Task Force, which is supposedly, you know, dealing with the issues of overcrowding in our emergency departments. It only met three times, I think, this year. in probably the worst winter we ever had for overcrowding that continues on even up to the past week or so. And the Irish Nurses and Midwives Organisation and their members need to be congratulated for the diligence in producing those numbers on a daily basis that helps keep some focus in the public mind. But to get back to your point there, just briefly about the public awareness, part of the problem, as I see it, is we have healthcare apartheid in Ireland. And if there was any other abuses in any other areas amongst our society, people would be, I won't say up in arms, it's not the right way to be, but they would certainly be out there advocating for, you know, a more compassionate way of dealing with the particular problem and in a fair way. But as I said to you, when I go on airways talking about the problems with the public patient, the other half of the population that I mentioned that have private health insurance are probably saying at home, isn't it awful for the public patient? But by God, thank God we have the private health insurance. And this is part of the problem, that it's very difficult for people to relate to somebody that has been waiting years for their hip replacement and, you know, goes in to have the operation only to be told either the night before or the morning of it, sorry, we've had to cancel it because we need the bed for somebody in the emergency department. This is sort of really unheard of in the private sector. It happens, I'm sure, from time to time, but not to the extent of the public patient. So public patients, I think, should cease being patient with the system and be more challenging. The state is paying a fortune for your care. It's not for nothing. This is our society, the way it's structured. And therefore, I think people should feel that when they are waiting long periods of time, I know that many of them are very, patient and, you know, go with the system. Well, that's the way it is. But until you start speaking out like your private patients on the other side of the fence, if they had to experience it, I think you would probably have to see more action in that area.
I appreciate you taking the time this afternoon. That is co-founder of the Irish Patients Association, Stephen McMahon.
Thank you. God bless.
Now, the Food Safety Authority have revealed that almost two-thirds of people are unaware on how to make a complaint about unfit food or poor hygiene practices. So it's about 61% of adults in Ireland. They don't know how to complain to these authorities regarding the unfit food or the poor hygiene. I am joined now on the line by Communications Manager with the Food Safety Authority of Ireland. That is Jane Ryder. How are you, Jane?
Hi, Kira.
Thank you so much for speaking with me.
No problem.
So, World Food Safety Day. There's a campaign being launched coinciding with this.
Yeah, today is World Food Safety Day, and it's a worldwide day, but has been launched by the World Health Organization and the Food and Agriculture Organization. And today, to kind of mark the day, we have launched a online campaign just raising awareness of consumers that if they do, the tagline is, they see something, they say something. So in other words, if you see unfit food or poor hygiene practices when you're buying food or eating out, they should report it to us and we, along with the inspectors, can follow up on it.
Why is it, do you think, that Irish people find it so difficult, in particular when they're in restaurants and when it comes to food, to make any sort of note or complaint?
I'm not sure. I mean, some are good at it. I mean, last year we had 3,414 complaints from consumers about unfit food or poor hygiene practices. But I suppose what we're trying to do is just alert everybody. And really, we want them to tell us. Because if they go in somewhere and they see something that's not good and they don't tell anybody, then, you know, the chances are that somebody else could go into the place and they might be very sick from it. So we want people to make a complaint. We have an online complaint form on our website, which is at fsai.ie/make it better.
Now, the research which was commissioned by yourselves at the authority also shows disparities across the generations. Baby boomers, they're the least likely to complain, and they are defined as those born, well, the generation is often defined as those born from 1946 to 1964. So they're aged over 54 and over. They're least likely to complain. But millennials, which are those aged 23 to 37, they are least likely to know how to submit a complaint. And you're noting you can do so on the FSAI's website. So you'd think that that generation, the millennials, would know how to sort it out.
Yeah, or maybe they just tell their friends, or they put it up on their TikTok page or something. But I suppose we're trying to encourage them not just to do that, to either, you know, say it in the place that you're in, because, you know, ask to speak to a manager, tell them there, or also make a complaint with us so that we can go and inspect it. That's what we're trying to do today, is just to raise awareness about the fact that you can, and that we'd encourage it.
Okay, I appreciate you taking the time. That is Jane Ryder. She's Communications Manager with the Food Safety Authority of Ireland. So today is World Food Safety Day, and the Food Safety Authority is launching this campaign, See Something, Say Something. Baby boomers, they are the least likely to complain. They are those aged over 54. And when it comes to the millennials, those aged between 23 and 37, they're least likely to know how to submit a complaint.